This is the Afternoon Magazine on WILL AM 580 and online at will.illinois.edu. Good afternoon. I'm Celeste Quinn. The city's population is 20 million. It contains thousands of neighborhoods. While it is home to a man believed to be the richest in the world, half the population lives in poverty. The city is Mexico City. On the program today, we'll take a look at the city journalist David Lida calls the capital of the 21st century. Late in the 1980s, Lida had a layover in Mexico City. He'd been a frequent visitor to Mexico, but had never explored the nation's biggest city. Why not? In his words, "I was afraid of the capital, influenced by the propaganda, dismissing it as a teeming, overpopulated, polluted bedlam, full of horrific testimonies of insuperable poverty." In his imagination, he equated Mexico City with Calcutta. Well, during that layover, in the space of an evening, David Lida fell in love with Mexico City. He says it is a city that is constantly improvising a new invention of itself. And he also says it can show Americans what the urban future looks like. More than 15 years ago, Lida left New York City to make his home in Mexico City. Lida's work has been published in the U.S. in many publications, including the New York Times, the Los Angeles Times, Gourmet, and the Village Voice. In Mexico, his reporting has appeared in DF, which is Mexico City's equivalent to The New Yorker. David Lida is the author of three books, the latest being First Stop in the New World, Mexico City, the Capital of the 21st Century. Listeners, you can join our discussion this afternoon with a phone call. Your questions and comments are invited. The number in the Champaign-Urbana area, 333-9455. That's 333-WILL. We also have a toll-free number, that number, 800-222-9455, 800-222-WILL. You'll find our guest, David Lida, online at davidlida.com, and that's L-I-D-A, davidlida.com. His book, First Stop in the New World, Mexico City, the Capital of the 21st Century, is published by Riverhead Books. And again, the phone number is 333-9455 and toll-free 800-222-9455. David Lida, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thanks for having me. It's a pleasure to be on the show.
You're more than welcome. I'm happy to have you here. It was a pleasure reading your book.
Thank you.
You say you've never felt so much at home anywhere else in the world. Why do you feel at home in Mexico City?
Well, I would say honestly that the answer to that question is I guess I just feel very accepted by the Mexicans, very, very very warmly treated by them. Not long ago, I had a different book published here, and there was a lot of attention for the book. But I had to think beyond these books. I mean, books are great, and it's wonderful to be a writer and to have books published. But that beyond your books, you've got a life, and the Mexicans or the people of Mexico City, the Chilangos, as they're called, have made me feel a part of the city, have made me feel like I belong here, and have made me feel loved. And I think that's more than anything why I feel at home here.
Yeah. It seems that Mexico City is a place very welcoming to outsiders.
Yes. In fact, sometimes I would say more welcoming to outsiders, unfortunately, than to their own people.
Yeah. Well, maybe here it would be a good point to talk a little about La Malinche.
Yes. Okay. La Malinche is an actual historical figure. She was a woman, an indigenous woman, who became the lover and interpreter of Hernán Cortés, the conqueror, the Spanish conqueror, in the 16th century. She kind of, smoothed his way into conquering Mexico. And she's a very controversial figure in Mexican history. At first, she was revered. The sort of Catholic historians looked at her as a civilizing influence of Mexico. But then, closer to the 20th century, she became seen as a traitor, as someone who had sold out her people to the Spaniards. And today, the term Malinchismo, based on her name, is used for any Mexican who favors foreign things over national things.
Hmm. And is that seen in a derisive way, or not?
Yes, Malinchismo is definitely a derisive term. I mean, some people look beyond. We are living in a globalized world. Too much nationalism is a very destructive thing. And you know, I am a person who was born and raised in New York, which is, you know, basically the Tower of Babel. Everyone in the world comes to live in New York, and so I have that point of view. I think it's good to have not only national but foreign influences, you know, wherever I'm and whatever city I'm going to be living in. I think that's part of what makes this city exciting. And I think that more and more, you know, there are Mexicans who have come to understand that it's great to have your own influences and to have influences from the outside world as well.
Yeah. Well, one of the things that I found really fascinating from your book and your website is that Mexico City is becoming an international city and has been welcoming to outsiders for a long time.
Absolutely, Celeste. I'm sorry if I interrupted you there. Did you finish your question?
I didn't, but I wanted to let our listeners know that there are 400,000 Mexicans of Lebanese descent in the city. There are Koreans and Chinese. And there are others who immigrated to Mexico, Syrians and Jews. And persecution led some of these people or their forebears to Mexico City. But I'm wondering, who are Mexico's most recent immigrants and what's leading them to the city?
Well, there are a lot of South Americans here. In Mexico City, there was an Argentine, there's a mm-hmm. crisis in Argentina about roughly 5 years ago. The peso had an enormous devaluation, and a lot of people from Argentina arrived here in the last few years. There are more Chinese than ever. I actually once spoke about this to the lawyer who helped me with my working papers here in Mexico, and he told me recently that you know there are many Chinese, many Koreans. You might have seen this, Celeste, on my website the other day. I put up a post that I went to a Korean restaurant and bar in a central neighborhood in Mexico City, and the waitress gave me a menu in Korean and apologized for not even having one in Spanish. And so I had to ask her what they served because, you know, unfortunately, my Korean skills are non-existent, but... And I like that, you know. Again, you know, maybe it's because I have this point of view of an ex-New Yorker, but I think that having the influence of, you know, a sort of international, for a city to have an international feel is a very exciting thing. There's also some people from other South American countries. You see some Brazilians, a lot of the models in the fashion shows and fashion business here are from Brazil, and there's always, you know, a lot of people from the U.S. in Mexico City. According to the U.S. Embassy, there are 1 million Americans in Mexico, and something like 440,000 of them are in Mexico City.
And before I continue down with I wanted to let people know where some of these folks were coming from. Did you want to say something in particular?
Okay. I just was trying to give an idea of what the immigration makeup looks like. Also, very visibly, you see Europeans because they have things like restaurants and shops. French, Italians, principally French, Spaniards, Italians. Are pretty visible in the restaurant business here.
Now, you describe Mexico's capital, Mexico City, as a city that's constantly improvising a new invention of itself. What do you mean? What does that look like?
Yeah, okay, it's a good question. Roughly half the people who live in Mexico City survive through the informal economy. Most of them are selling things on the street, but they are also maids who clean people's apartments, people who clean public office buildings, most of the taxi drivers. These are people who, and then people who also have improvised jobs, like what's called a bieni. That means someone who, when you're trying to park your car on the street, he's sort of standing there telling you to go a little bit to the left, a little bit to the right, and expects you to give him a small tip for his services. Mm. Because so many people cannot count on having a regular job with a regular paycheck or things like insurance, they have to come up with something. And you know, they might be juggling on the street. They might be prostitutes or ficheras, which is something that's sort of like a prostitute, but more like a geisha. It's a woman who sells her company to men, but usually there's no sex involved. There's just guys who go to these bars to cry on a sympathetic woman's shoulders most of the time. So that's what I mean by people improvising. I mean, they have to make up what they're going to do with their lives, because they cannot count on institutions or structures to give them that kind of structure for their lives.
And also, apparently, there's an idea that to work for someone else and not for oneself is folly.
Well, yeah. Unfortunately, salaries are very low for most people in Mexico. Most people who work salary jobs, even ones that you might think would pay a good salary, are earning very little. You know, doctors who have private practices in expensive neighborhoods or well-to-do neighborhoods, they might earn a lot of money. But if you come from a poor family and somehow manage your parents, you know, to send you through medical school, you'll probably end up working in a clinic where you'll make something like $400 or $500 a month.
Hmm. It's not a very good deal.
No. And you think about all those years in medical school.
Yeah.
Whereas a guy who sells tacos on the street might make two or three times that much.
Yeah.
If not more.
Yeah. Now, one of the things that people learn early in the book is that while the GDP is pretty good per capita, half of the city's residents live at or near the poverty level and 15% below it. But you also note that virtually everyone has a roof over his or her head, electricity, running water, and a TV set.
Yeah, and I think I mentioned in the book that more than half the people in the city have cell phones.
Yeah.
I think that's a very important point to make about Mexico City. Something like a billion people around the world go to bed hungry at night, Celeste. People who are literally starving to death. Anyone who starves to death in Mexico City is an anomaly. Most people manage to tread water. And some of them, you know, the most enterprising, manage to claw their way out of poverty. You know, it's obviously, by the standards of the U.S. or Europe or Canada, you know, these people live very close to the margin. But compared to those billion or so who are starving to death, they're not doing that badly.
Now, how does the city's situation compare with the rest of Mexico?
It is one of the most prosperous places in Mexico. I believe that there are some places in the north and along the border. I'm pretty sure that Monterrey, which is the most prosperous northern city, has a higher per capita income. I don't have those statistics at hand.
Mm.
But it is one. I mean, there are some places in Mexico, particularly in rural parts of the poorest states, that researchers with the UN compare to Africa in terms of their poverty. I mean, there are no parts of Mexico City that are like that. Although in the neighboring Mexico states, there's a few parts that are really up against it.
Yeah. So outside the city, is Mexico City a place that's seen as being the place to make your mark on the world, kind of a New York City?
Actually, it used to be that way. It used to be, well, first of all, most Mexicans don't, you know, when you're thinking with a U.S. model of someone who's, you know, very ambitious, might say, yeah, I've got to go to New York or Chicago or L.A. to make my mark. You know, you're thinking about people who have great ambitions, who are upwardly mobile. There's not that much upward mobility in Mexico. Unfortunately, most people stay at the same economic level in which they're born, or maybe they do a little bit better. So it's not like, oh, well, you know, I'm going to go to Mexico City and conquer the world. It's more like I'm going to go to Mexico City because this town that I come from, we're starving to death. And I've got to go to Mexico City so I can get some kind of a job and send money home to my family. That was the way it was between, say, 1960 and 1990, 1995. Suddenly, Mexico City just kind of got saturated. Too many people came here. And now those people, those Mexicans who are starving in their towns or their families are doing really badly, they're the ones you see in Illinois, or they're in New York, or they're in L.A. Most of those Mexicans go to the U.S. now rather than Mexico City to keep their families alive.
Hmm. Is there a Mexican middle class, and what does it mean in Mexico to be of the middle class?
Well, that's an interesting question. Middle class, there is definitely a middle class. It's small compared to the middle class in the U.S. or Europe or countries where most people belong to the middle class. But it's larger than a lot of other Latin American countries where the distribution of wealth is even worse than it is here in Mexico. Being middle class in Mexico on real terms means, you know, you've got a job, you've got a house, you might rent it or you might own it. You've got a place to live. You might have a car. You're living a relatively stable existence. It doesn't mean that you're necessarily living in an extravagant way, but you're not up against it every day the way so many Mexicans are.
Mm. Are there generational differences here in terms of how one generation, the up and coming young, the younger set views it from the middle-aged folks and older people?
Sure, absolutely, Celeste. You know, one thing that's interesting about the world today, not just Mexico City, is that kids around the world, they're YouTube kids, they're MySpace kids, they're MySpace, rather, Facebook. The kids in Mexico City today who are, say, under 25 have access to amounts of information that their predecessors did not have. It's very evident when you talk to them that they just know a lot of stuff, that even someone who's 35 or 40, when they were 25, they didn't know. Even though most people in Mexico City do not have personal computers, there's a lot of cyber cafes where you can go in and for a very low hourly rate, get online. And these kids, they know a lot. They know a lot about the world. They know about sex in a way that their parents didn't know, or even people who are a little older than they didn't know. They have access to meet people around the world and talk to people around the world through media like Facebook and MySpace and all of that.
Yeah.
So, yeah, there's definitely a generational difference.
Speaking of sex, tell us about the man who wants to be Mexico City's king of porn.
Well, when I was working for the AFA, that Mexico City magazine, I did a section of quirky chronicles about people in the city and, you know, how they got by. And somebody told me about this man who wants to build a porno empire. And, I met him at a kind of divey cantina in a dodgy neighborhood. You know, a very well-spoken, presentable, charismatic man. He was 34 at the time. And he had made a movie called Fetiches Mexicanos, number one, or Mexican Fetishes, number one, because he had in his mind the idea that there was going to be a series of 10. And, he had this whole idea that, he had a lot of facts and figures at hand about how according to him, the Hilton hotel chain makes more money from people looking at porno in their hotel rooms than they do from the mini bars. And, you know, he just thought there was all sorts of money to be made, and he imagined that, you know, he'd make movies and he'd sell the movies to TV and that they'd be selling little porno things of his in newsstands around the city. It hasn't happened yet, but, you know, I guess we all have to be motivated by our dreams.
Yeah. What an interesting fellow.
Yeah. I wanted to mention, Celeste, I guess just to make it clear that my book contains a lot of research about, you know, these most important issues that are going on in Mexico City. But it is, I try to tell those stories through the eyes of the people who live here, whether they are that, you know, young man who wants to be a porno king, taxi drivers, wrestlers, street kids, taco vendors, people who sell newspapers on the street. I really want the reader to get a sense of what it's like to survive in this city. And I thought there was no better way to do that than let the people of Mexico City tell their stories.
Mm. Well, that's why it's so readable. I mean, it's very well done.
Thank you, Celeste. I really appreciate hearing that.
And I hope that people will read the book as a result of listening to us this afternoon. This is The Afternoon Magazine. Our guest this afternoon, writer-journalist David Lita. He is the author, most recently, of First Stop in the New World, Mexico City, the capital of the 21st century. Listeners, if you'd like to join us this afternoon with a question or a comment, give us a phone call. The number in the Champaign-Urbana area is 333-9455. That's 333-WILL. And toll-free, 800-222-9455. 800-222-WILL. Well, when a friend comes to visit you and has never been to the city, what do you want to show him or her?
Well, usually, I'll send them to the museums in the morning while I work, and then I'll go meet them for lunch in a cantina. Cantinas are Mexican bars, and just the traditional Mexican lunch hour is late. Nobody here eats lunch before 2 p.m., and many people don't eat until 3 or 4. And if you go to a cantina in Mexico City, with the price of your drinks, they give you a free lunch, and in some of the cantinas, the food is very, very good, traditional Mexican food, and they're also fun places. I mean, people come wandering in and out, selling things. Mostly, you know, the idea, I believe, is because some of the guys get drunk and they stay there into the night, and then they come home late, and they've got some little present that they've bought for their wife or their kids. And I've met some very interesting people. One of them made it into the book. He's a guy who sells pirated DVDs. I should mention that the piracy is a big problem here. Mexico is one of the 10 countries that's always cited as the worst, as having the worst problems with piracy, along with China and Russia. But the part of the problem, just frankly, is that things like a movie ticket is about $5 here, which I guess is less than it would cost in Champaign-Urbana. But remember, the minimum wage here is also $5 a day. So that's just, if you're someone with a family, it's just too expensive. So people sell these pirated DVDs for a dollar or two, and that's how most people see movies here. Anyway, one of these guys goes from cantina to cantina, and he's got, you know, this incredible collection of art films and foreign films, as well as, you know, the latest Disney releases. And he turned out to be an adept of Saint Charbel, who is one of the most popular saints in Mexico City. And he just, you know, he had a really interesting story to tell, and so he's in the book too.
Mm. Let's take a call now. A listener in Urbana on line one. Hello, you're on the air with David Lita.
Yes, hi. I'm glad to hear you on the show. I ran out and bought your book as soon as it was available. And
I'm so glad to hear that. Many, many thanks.
Oh, I I've been around Mexico many parts and many times over the years. I haven't actually been to Mexico City in very many years to actually visit the city, although years ago I had. Actually, the last time I was in Mexico City, I got out on the outskirts and got stopped by a policeman who I think tried to extort $60 from me, which I let him do, and then he directed me to the pyramids, so that was okay, I guess. Well, my question has to do with kind of the reverse of the immigration that we see here in the United States, is that I've always been drawn to the idea of moving to Mexico and working and living in Mexico. I know that in retirement, sometimes people do that with their Social Security, but what about just someone who wants to move to Mexico City and get a job and live there? How feasible is that?
Well, I did, but before I get to that, I did want to mention about the retirement situation is interesting. I mentioned that there's a million people from the U.S. in Mexico today, but hello?
I think you just,
there?
Yeah, we're still okay.
Okay.
The caller just hung up to listen on the air.
Yeah, weird noise.
Yeah.
It is estimated that in the next 2 years, another million is going to come here because as the baby boomers age and retire, property prices in Mexico are a lot less expensive than in the U.S., and it is forecast that there will be another million or so people from the U.S. here. Now, if the caller is still on the line in terms of getting a job here and working here, I'd really have to know what he does for a living. I mean, there are opportunities here in Mexico, but it really depends what industry you're in and finding a way to carve a niche for yourself.
Maybe
is he still on the line?
I think what happened is he decided he would listen on his radio, and so he rang off. So maybe he'll join us again and fill us in.
It would really depend on what you do for a living. I think that, again, as the world becomes more globalized, more and more people are looking to try their luck in different countries in the world. It's not, people no longer see themselves as being limited to the country that they're from to survive. And there's a chapter in the book about that gives five examples of people who've come to Mexico City from the U.S., from England, from South America, from Europe, to try their luck here. And maybe in that chapter there that would give at least a clue to that caller or other people who are interested.
He's back with us now. He called back in. So let's go and talk with our Urbana caller, line one. Hi.
Hi. I got bumped off, I guess. But
what's your name?
My name's Greg.
Greg, what do you do for a living?
Well, I am a teacher. I've been a high school teacher, and I've been a writer for local publications, newspapers, and some technical magazines.
Well, they always need people who can teach English here. I mean, that may not be what you want to do, but in Mexico City, they're always looking for native speaker English teachers. And also, there are some schools. I know there's a British school and there's an American school that look for people to teach in the English language.
So I wouldn't need any special visa, or is that complicated?
If you've got a teacher's degree and you've got experience as a teacher and you want to be a teacher here, I believe that you would be very attractive to those particular schools and they would arrange the visa for you. You do need a visa to work legally here.
All right.
I believe that the schools, might well be interested in you, and if they are, they would arrange it for you.
Right. Well, I appreciate you being on the show, and I'll finish reading your book with much interest, and I am going to hang up now before I get cut off again. So.
Thank you, Greg.
Thanks for the call. Other telephone calls are invited this afternoon for our guest, David Lita, author of First Stop in the New World, Mexico City, the capital of the 21st century. You can join us with a phone call. Questions, comments are invited. 333-9455, the number in the Champaign-Urbana area. Anywhere else, toll-free, 800-222-9455. Well, you spent your first night in Mexico City in 1987. How long was it before you decided you would make it your home, and what challenges did you face?
To answer your first question, I was living here in 1990, so in less than 3 years I had worked it out. I guess the biggest challenges are, well, I mean, the traffic is to me the biggest challenge. I mean, there are just too many cars in this city, and public transportation is far from what it should be. So just getting from one place to another is often an adventure, always a challenge, and sometimes a nightmare. And it's not even depending on how far you're going. Sometimes places that are fairly close to where you are leaving from in the first place, there's so much traffic to get to a fairly short distance that, it can take forever. So I think that's probably, I mean, to me, that's the biggest challenge of living here. There's cultural codes that you have to learn. There's no way that someone who's not from here is going to understand them. About people showing up late. If somebody tells you to come to a party at 9 and you show up before 10, they're going to look at you funny. Also, Mexicans hate to say no, at least in Mexico City. I mean, in other parts of the country, people speak to you more directly, but people in Mexico City are very formal. They tend to speak in code. For example, there was an event for the Spanish language book that I did here in Mexico City a while back, and I invited someone to come to it, and she sent me an email saying, "I will definitely try to be there," which I knew meant she wouldn't be there. But she couldn't just say, "No, I can't make it," or "No, I won't be able to make it," because that's just almost impossible for a Mexican to pass through a Mexican's lips.
Let's take another call now. A listener in Champaign on line one. Good afternoon.
Hello. This is Jack. How are you today?
Fine.
Hi,
how
Jack.
Are you?
Good. I'm enjoying listening to the program. I am curious how the church, particularly the Catholic Church, as the world's becoming more secularized in a huge city like that's now international, as you're saying, as the fabric of life changed, maybe that was a generation or two ago that was very centered around the church, or at least perceived to be, are the young people split on whether they're part of the church, or are they just going through the motions, or are they just backing out of the church altogether?
That's a very good question, Jack. And in fact, I'll give you a short answer, but there's a whole chapter in the book about religion. I think in general, okay, first of all, something a little over 90% of people in Mexico City identify themselves as Catholic. So that gives you at least an idea of their perception of themselves. I think it's actually many people are quite religious. Many people are observant. I mean, not everybody who identifies himself as Catholic goes to Mass every week, but a lot of people certainly do. And a lot of people, the chapter in my book about religion focuses on saints and how much worship there is of saints in this city. I would definitely identify it as a religious city, as a city where you get a sense of people's faith when you walk on the streets. And I think part of that has to do with the poverty. When people have fewer other recourses as to hope how they can hope to achieve their goals in life, many of them will turn to religion. When people are suffering, many of them will turn to religion. And I think that is one of several reasons why Mexico City still remains a strongly Catholic place.
Yeah, and I know people have a great devotion to Our Lady of Guadalupe and the Virgin Mary and general saints in that culture. And, it's not hard to understand why the Bible says it's easier for a camel to go through the eye of a needle than a rich man to heaven. you know, you see in that
right.
poverty that they have, like you said, that is just their place to turn to and how they deal with the cross of poverty. But are Catholics down there, like American Catholics, where they're cafeteria Catholics, like, could they say they're a Catholic yet still use birth control and still, you know, believe in, you know, euthanasia or other things? Or has that happened, or do you understand that deeply into the kind of the fabric of people saying they're Catholic versus picking and choosing the teachings of the church?
Well, look, I think you can definitely find people, you can find the whole spectrum of people who identify themselves as Catholics in Mexico City, from those who never go to Mass and just say, you know, and just believe they are, from those who believe in abortion and believe in contraception and so forth, but still consider themselves Catholics, to those who across the board 100% follow the rules of the church. If you go to the Basilica de Guadalupe, which is the most important shrine to the Virgin of Guadalupe in Mexico City, not only on any Sunday, but virtually any day of the week, you'll find crowds of pious people there. And on her Saints Day, December 11th, millions of people literally show up. So, it's not. Remember, there's 20 million people in this city, and so one can't just answer for all of them in one gulp. But you get the whole spectrum, Jack. Every kind of Catholic that there is, or every kind of person who identifies himself as Catholic, is here.
Okay. Well, muchas gracias, vaya con Dios, mi amigo.
Okay. Gracias a usted.
Thanks for the call. Let's take another call. Listener in Urbana, line 2. Hi.
Hi. I've traveled to Mexico frequently and Mexico City often, and every stereotype that Americans have about Mexico City is just totally wrong.
I agree with you.
The people are the friendliest, and the city is just incredibly diverse. And there's so many places to go and see and so many different neighborhoods to visit. And every
Yeah, I agree. I would say culturally that Mexico City is much closer to the level of a, you know, supposedly first world city like Chicago or New York or Paris or London than it is, you know, to any other city in Latin America. The offerings you have here in terms of museums and art galleries, theater and film, restaurants, the music, they really are, there's a lot going on here. It is an incredible city.
The neighborhoods, you can go into richer neighborhoods like Polanco and a little west of there and all, or you can go into the older neighborhoods like Coyacon. The wealth is incredible, and most Americans would never dream of the kind of wealth that are in those kind of neighborhoods.
You're absolutely right. You know, I've taken people to Polanco, which is sort of the Beverly Hills of Mexico, and you know, there's the main street there, or one of the main streets. You know, there's every international boutique that you can think of.
President Mazurk.
What?
President Mazurk.
Yes, exactly. And a lot of people from the United States and other countries are not even aware that there is the concentration of wealth in this country that can afford to go to those places or those cities.
Okay.
I mean those stores. Fortunately, it's in the hands of very few people. Obviously, the great majority of people in Mexico City cannot afford to go, you know, to buy their clothes at you know, the designer stores. But
people in Champaign can afford to go buy their clothes at the
designer. Okay, fair enough. That's a good point.
And in fact, when you look at like the diversity of the restaurants, you can get almost a gourmet meal. Not at the Four Seasons Hotel, but right across the street from the Four Seasons Hotel, with a guy with a little tiny push cart who can fix you a meal that just blows you away for $2.50.
Yeah. What's your name, sir?
Jack.
Jack. You're absolutely right. I mean, you can eat well in restaurants with white tablecloths and very highly trained waiters, and it'll cost you as much as it would as a meal in Chicago or New York. But you can also go to a little fonda, which are sort of
cafeteria, home cooking style holes in the wall, and you can get a 4-course meal for between $2 and $4, and eat really well.
And you gotta the transportation system in Mexico City. Everybody talks about the nightmare of the cars and all. You can go anywhere in town you want. It's a very large city for 20 cents and go quickly and cheaply and fast and safely, extremely safely. And you can't beat that transportation system. It's just incredible.
Well, I have my problems with the transportation system. I mean, the subway system, the metro, is very good.
Well, that's what I'm talking about, mainly.
But it's not. It doesn't go everywhere. I mean, there's a lot of places in the city that the metro just doesn't get to. So then you've either got to get in a taxi or get in a bus, or you know, find some other way to complete the rest of your journey. And you know, I think that the public transportation system here leaves something to be desired. But if you're on, if you're going somewhere where there's a metro stop, from somewhere where there's a metro stop, you've got a great deal.
That's true. Well, good enough. Thanks a lot.
Thanks for
the call. It's a pleasure to talk to you, Jack.
We're going to have to wrap up fairly quickly, and before we do, I'm interested in the city's political culture. What's it like?
Well, Celeste, you know, I look at politics and politicians basically around the world with skepticism, something between skepticism and contempt. I don't believe that the politicians in Mexico City, for the most part, are serving their constituents. Mm-hmm. Politics is a big business here. I mean, people who work in politics, congressmen, senators, deputies, they earn more money than their counterparts in the United States and Europe. There's a chapter about this in my book too. And you know, others of them, you know, it's like a racket. It's a license to steal money. And I think that Mexicans basically work their way around these politicians in this political system that is not doing them a great deal of good. Through their strength, resilience, and ingeniousness, they find ways to survive, or, you know, in the best of instances, thrive, despite a political system that I don't believe is working for them.
Mm-hmm. So what can we Americans learn from Mexico City?
Well, I think what Americans can learn from Mexico City primarily is how much of the world works, how many, if not most, of the people in the world survive. I think Mexico City is emblematic. More than half the people in the world live in cities today, Celeste, and most of those people are in these huge, crazy, chaotic cities like Mexico City, like Cairo, Karachi, Shanghai, Mumbai. And I think if you understand a little bit about how Mexico City works, you understand how a lot of the world works and how a lot of people in the world survive.
Mm. So they represent the future.
I believe so. I believe the urban future, that Mexico City is emblematic of what many cities, if not most, are going to look like through the century.
Hmm. There we'll leave it. We've used up the time. It flew by. Thank you very much for joining us this afternoon.
The pleasure was all mine, Celeste. Your questions and the questions of your callers were very stimulating. Many thanks for having me.
You're very welcome. David Leda has been our guest in this portion of the afternoon magazine. He is the author of 3 books. His latest, First Stop in the New World, Mexico City, the Capital of the 21st Century. The book is published by Riverhead Books, and you'll find our guest online at davidleda.com. That's LIDA, davidleda.com. He is also the author of Travel Advisory, which is a collection of short stories, and he is the author of a collection of journalism, which is written in Spanish. David Leda has been our guest in this portion of the program.